Hi, it's time for Dr. Lisa Gives a Shit. So this is like the freakiest thing ever because I'm actually recording this from my bedroom on Zoom. Anyway, I got to get used to this. This is the second at home session I've done since the pandemic started, since they officially started the pandemic. And I have to say, this is one of the few things this radio station, this radio show in particular, for me, all my people at the station, it's one of the few things that's helping me keep my shit together. I think what's actually this really, I don't know, important thing that that people are feeling is that it does, this situation that we're all in together does help remind us what we really value and what's really important. And the people that are important and the things that we do that are important. This show, this station is one of those things for me. But I think it's also great for all of you listeners out there in pandemic land, to reflect on that. And you probably are anyway. But I also want to remind all of you that it's just a super important time to help community radio, like Radio Free Brooklyn. Okay. So there's so many ways that you can help us. And listening to our station is important. You can download our station and have it on your iPhone or your Android phone or whatever phone you have. And if you can donate to us, that's really great too. But no matter what, go to radiofreebrooklyn.org. If you want to donate, it's /donate. Okay, so keep us in mind. When you're thinking about what's important, okay, because we're important. Anyway, I am really grateful to be in touch with you guys, and I'm always there for you. You can contact me anywhere on social media, at Dr. Lisa Levy SP or Facebook or whatever. But today I have a guest that is someone that is really important to me, Calvin Williams. Calvin is one of our co-hosts, but he's so much more one of our, hosts at the station. He does a very amazing music show that is very popular and a well-loved music show called Lush Vibes Radio. But Calvin is so much more than that at the station because he's on the management team, and he's actually the one person that I can think of that is more technologically savvy, perhaps, than Tom Tenney, the guy that invented all the way of putting the station together. And he's just somebody that is just a really important member of our community that people really look up to and respect and value. So I'm going to bring him on in a second. And so, Calvin, you're there, man, right?
I am here.
Okay. Before we get started on, who you are and what we're going to really discuss today, let's hear a little bit about your show. Can you tell us about your show and when it's on, the thinking behind it, all that good stuff? How long you've been doing it?
Okay, so my show is Lush Vibes Radio. It comes on Tuesday nights from 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern Time. The tagline is 2 hours of the airy, atmospheric, ambient side of all the genres you love and all the genres you didn't know you loved. So during my show, I will explore all different genres of music. From like, I usually focus on like R&B and pop and soul, but I'll dive into like classical or country music or orchestral, basically any type of music that has like a certain like very airy texture to it, like very like the kind of music you can like put headphones on and you can just like feel it in your ears and feel it in your body, you know.
So. Yeah, it's kind of like your personality. I think being around Calvin is very relaxing. although I don't think he's relaxed, I'm beginning to learn, but he creates like this really chill vibe. Like being around him is just a great vibe. Being around you, thank Calvin, you. Since thank you're you, right you. Here. So what's your influences? Like, where do you learn? You must be learning about, you know, in touch with a lot of different influences all the time, I'm guessing.
So I think just my love for music in general starts with my dad, who was back in a past life, a funk musician.
Oh, really?
He was in a traveling funk band. He played saxophone. It was a really cool band. They were called Charisma, and my dad to this day will argue that his band was kind of like close to the same level as like the likes of Tower of Power.
Wow, that's so cool!
Which is an incredible funk band, and I've listened to some of their tracks.
Did he tour and stuff?
Yeah, he toured. He toured with that band for. At least 7 or 8 years, possibly longer.
And was he making a living?
That was his living for during that time.
Wow, that's so impressive. I didn't even know that. See how cool, this is what I want you guys to know about our friend Calvin. See how cool Calvin is? I didn't even know that. He's never like, most guys would be like, hey, my dad was in the coolest band ever. You know what I mean? That's awesome. Have you seen him perform and stuff like that?
That was long before I was born. So uh-huh. I never got to see that side of him.
Have you seen him play though? Does he play?
No, he doesn't play. After his whole music career ended, he put everything away and
focused on you.
Live a more civilian life, and okay. I came along a little bit later, so
so Calvin and I, folks, so here's the thing. Calvin and I want to talk about Calvin's had like a really hard period in his life in the last, I'm gonna say, he's had 5 years ago Calvin was officially diagnosed with juvenile diabetes and in his 30s, which is very, very rare. Yeah. And he's had to learn how to integrate that into his life, and it's really affected him. So I think it's a really inspiring story because we are all thinking about our health now and how we have to, we are all coping in a certain way with what Calvin has been coping with for the last 5 years, how to integrate an uncertainty about his health into his life. And so I'm very interested to really get into discussion about that. But on top of that, Calvin has gone through, he's lost a lot of close relatives in the last few years, which has really compounded how, you know, what he's him trying to like get his, you know, his life, trying to like understand that he's also dealing with his own health issues. So Calvin, just to start us off, why don't you give us a little bit about the background on your family and what you've been through with your family, and then if it makes sense to you, integrate how finding out about your illness came in through that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yep. I got you. So, we'll go back to 2014. In 2014, I lost, My two grandmothers within 4 months of each other, as well as my great great uncle. He was my grandmother's uncle, but he.
Calvin, let me just say, I want people to understand, and I want to understand your relationship. Like you're a very close knit family, right?
Yeah.
And can you explain that? Because, you know, the idea of grandmother means so many different things to so many people. There are people who never see, you know, their grandparents live in like LA. They never see them. So yeah. Describe your relationship with your family a little bit.
So at least with my grandmothers, they were like as polar opposite as you can get. My mother's mother, very fun oriented, very fashion conscious, very creative. She made her own hats and jewelry and so many amazing things. And she was the one that I would go over to her house and like listen to old records and just like sit and have a good time. And on the flip side, my father's mother, comparatively speaking, very conservative, because my grandfather, her husband was a minister. And so they were, both very, religious, but like my grandmother wasn't the like Bible thumping type. She just lived, a certain way, like very reserved, very, like I can't say like she jammed religion down our throats, but she was who she was.
Yeah.
But so at the same time,
did you grow up around them? Is your family very close knit? Like, did everybody see each other all the time? And like, did you guys do a lot of things as a family unit?
So, it's a complex story because I have half brother and two half sisters, and so like. My time with them was kind of like broken up quite a bit. So, I would say I spent more time with my mother's mother, but that doesn't mean that I didn't have a lot of quality time.
No, but I mean, they were part of your life, right?
They were very much a part of my life.
You saw them regularly.
Yep, I saw them on a pretty regular basis. They are like very, very important parts of my life, and so.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. They were around.
They're around. They were very much around, and have so many wonderful memories of them and with them, and my mother's mother passed away first. She battled a long time with Alzheimer's, and then.
Oh, that's hard.
Suffered a stroke, and so she was in a nursing home for the remaining couple of years of her life, and so she just kind of deteriorated mentally.
Oh, that's hard.
Before she passed. And on the flip side, my father's mother, still mentally sharp as a tack, but her body gave out on her.
So were those two women that took care of you a lot that really, did they help you feel grounded and?
Very much so.
And consistent in your life, that kind of thing?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So that must have been, so that was 2014. And then what happened?
Along with that, also in 2014, my uncle Buddy, who is, he was basically like another grandfather. Like he looked after my mother in like so many significant ways. Like he loved my mother to death and looked out for me and my mom and my older brother. Mm-hmm. And so, him passing took a hit on us as well.
Was he sick for a while or was it sort of sudden or?
He lived in a nursing home. Mentally, everything was still there. Just
so that was like just a few months after that.
Yes. Yeah, so my mother's mother passed in August. Then my Uncle Buddy in October. And then my father's mother in December.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
So I was dealing with all of that. And then about a month later, I started becoming sick and ultimately found out I had diabetes.
What were the symptoms? Like, what happened?
Constant thirst, weakness, frequently having to run to the bathroom, literally every 20 to 30 minutes. Mm-hmm.
Did it feel like some of that was like brought, did it feel like that, you know, stress, like, did it feel like you were feeling really stressed and then you started feeling physically not well?
Yes. Yeah. I feel.
Did it feel related?
It almost felt related at the time because of everything I was going through and just trying to hold it together, you know?
So what happened? You went to the doctor.
I went to the doctor. They checked my A1C. I had tested that obviously that I was diabetic, but so I was initially diagnosed as type 2 because at the time I was 29 and usually adults get type 2 diabetes. And so they gave me the pills to regulate my blood sugar and everything. And so everything was good for like a year and a half. Then I started getting sick again. Ended up in the ER twice.
Oh my God. Really? Wow.
The second time I lucked out and found a competent doctor who was like, you know what, let's do a blood test to see if you're actually type 1. Turns out I've been type 1 the whole time.
Oh, wow.
So that was an experience in itself.
So what was that like when you heard that? Devastating. I mean,
finding out your diabetic period is devastating enough. Finding out you're misdiagnosed is even more difficult.
What was that like? Were you like, oh, I haven't been treated? Were you angry? I mean, that would make sense, right?
Were you angry?
I mean, I think that anybody would be angry at, like, rationally, not rationally, who cares? But like,
the main reason I was angry was because the doctors the first time around when I was initially diagnosed didn't do the legwork to really see which diabetes that I had. They just made the assumption I was type 2 because I was 29.
Right.
But as it turns out, type 1 diabetes happens later in life for a number of people. It's uncommon, but it happens. So I just happen to be one of those people. It's hereditary. My grandfather, my father's father, was also a type 1 diabetic late in life.
Wow.
So
that's devastating. Did they work out a good plan for, you know, to manage your diabetes, or like what happened after that?
So after being correctly diagnosed, I had to go on insulin. So I started taking the insulin shots. I immediately started feeling better. And so I had to incorporate that into my life.
Taking
shots. So I did the shots for a good year and a half. Mm-hmm. And then I asked my doctor, do you think an insulin pump would be good for me? And he was like, absolutely. And so that's why right now I'm using an insulin pump. It's a lot more convenient. It's expensive, but it's a lot more convenient than having to stab myself every few hours.
So where are you now as far as like the, how does it affect your life being I mean, first of all, I don't know any statistics, but I know that most people with juvenile diabetes find out like before they're like 5 or 6 or something, right? Isn't that common?
Right.
Like maybe at 1 or 2, how often, what they usually find out as babies?
Either as babies or like as like preteens.
So I mean, it's horrible having diabetes, but like, so what how does it affect your life now? Like what, how can you describe it, I guess?
I think if I were diagnosed as a child, it probably wouldn't be so bad for me because I'd be like, I would have adjusted long time ago. But
right. But I mean, on a day-to-day basis. So like you have the pump, right? But do you notice, like, do you still have to monitor yourself? Do you get like sick? Like, are you afraid to go on a long trip? Like, how does it affect you on a day-to-day basis at this time, in this point in your life?
On a physical level, it is a little tiring, because you have, even though I'm not taking the shots anymore, like I have to, like every 3 or 4 days, I have to put a new infusion set into my stomach, and that's even more painful than the shots were.
Really? So that's,
depending on if I hit a nerve or not, and that tends to happen. And so that's, so
and you feel tense physical before portion. You do it, right? You're like, you don't, you're like, oh shit, I'm going to have, you don't want to do it. You're like, man, I'm going to have to make myself do this, right?
It's just, I have to psych myself up to, before I do it.
Yeah.
And just brace in case there's going to be pain associated with it. Mm. So it's rough to say the least. And on top of that, there's the emotional toll of knowing that like this machine is basically the thing saving me from an early grave.
Oh, so you mean if like, God forbid something happened, just like the power that the machine has is crazy. It's a mechanical thing that you can see or like it's a thing. Being kept alive by a thing.
This little device that people confuse for an iPod all the time.
Wow. So there's that, but like, do you have restrictions? What kind of restrictions do you have that you can't, things you can't do? Things you can't eat, things like that. What kind of restrictions do you have?
Carbs are my enemy, unfortunately, as a diabetic. So, like spaghetti nights, those are done. Like
no birthday cake.
I really don't do birthday cake anymore.
Hmm. No. So anyway, no spaghetti. Sorry. And what else?
No spaghetti. Very little pasta. Like I have to monitor my intake of rice and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's pretty rough.
Do you, like, if you get invited to somebody's house for dinner or something, are you like, oh no, I'm going to have to deal with this? Or does that bother you? Or is that an issue?
I usually stick to more proteins and things of that nature. So meat, cheeses,
right.
Everything that doesn't involve carbs.
Right. So you can usually find something to eat.
Right.
Yeah. And then what about like traveling or activities?
If I go anywhere that's going to be longer than 2 days, I have to bring insulin with me.
Mm-hmm. And that has to be refrigerated?
Yep, that has to be refrigerated. So, like, I have to travel with an ice pack and ice packs and the whole nine.
Mm-hmm. Is there ever a trip that you wanted to go on that you couldn't go on? Or I guess you're not thinking that way, are you?
I've been on trips to Georgia, and I've been to California. And,
yeah, you had a nice trip last summer, I think, right?
Yeah. Yep, I did.
That's good.
Lisa, I'm really sorry. I've Mike calling me right now, and I'm going to have to take this.
Okay, go ahead. His show's on right now. Do you mind doing it on the show? Okay, so go ahead. So this is, I'll talk to the people. You go ahead, Mike.
Okay.
So here's what's going on. Calvin is our dedicated management person, is actually having to manage the station right now. So one of the hosts is in touch with him because they need help for their show that's on right at the moment. So I'm going to just talk to you guys why this is going on. Let's see. This is a really rough time. I want to tell you something. I actually started seeing my therapist again last night because I feel so stressed by this whole thing that, and I'm also dealing with somebody who's okay, but ill on top of it. So, you know, not seriously, seriously scary ill, but there's a lot of fucking pressure, man. It's been really rough. So I did what I thought was a good thing. And I made an appointment with my shrink, who I haven't seen in like almost a year. And during this period, I am going back to therapy because I have to tell you, I was talking to her about it. This is a time when a lot of people regress. This is a time when people don't know what to do. You want to be, you know, it's almost like an identity crisis. Like, who are you? What are you doing? Like, it's just a complete, we're all at sea, folks. We're all at fucking sea. So, this is actually a time when people need help from a therapist, and it's a good time to get help. And therapists are very available. You know, it's easy to have a teleconference or whatever. So if you are feeling overwhelmed, I encourage you to get in touch with a shrink, a real shrink, a licensed shrink. And I'm going to be posting some options for you on my Facebook page for that.
If I may interject, Lisa, you did send me some really fantastic resources earlier, and I greatly appreciate that.
Oh, good. Well, I'll be. So is Mike okay?
Yep, Mike. Mike is good.
Okay. Well, I'm glad you were able to help him.
Yeah, he's doing his show live from his house right now.
Okay, good tech shrinking there. See, you yes. did some tech shrinking.
Yes.
So we were talking about how your life is affected by being diabetic on a, you know, day-to-day, you know, level, just on a practical level. So you have do you feel healthy most days? Do you feel healthy most days, or do you feel ill during the day, or what happens?
For the most part, I would say like 85% of the time I'm feeling pretty healthy, but there'll be days where my blood sugar will just do really weird things and without any real explanation, and my blood sugar will like fluctuate up or down or both. And so those are the days where things get really difficult.
So it's unpredictable. And then when you feel ill, what do? Do you have to stay home? Well, you have to stay home now anyway.
Right.
But do you have to muddle through the day? Is it like pushing yourself?
Yeah. Especially after, like, if I'm experiencing low blood sugar, low blood sugars are the most difficult experiences. So
what is it like? Do you feel tired? Do you feel nauseous? Do you feel
extremely weak? I start getting chills. Your body starts to shake because basically it's, You have low blood sugar, it affects your nerves and your brain. And so like your brain and your nerves are literally beginning to starve. And so your body's reacting to your nerves, like basically going into a panic.
Mm-hmm. And can you eat? Does eating help? Eating sugar help? Or
yep, that's actually the treatment for low blood sugar. Just finding any source of sugar. But most diabetics will overdo it when trying to get through low blood sugar. And so the next thing is high blood sugar.
Oh, so it's still like you've still got to be really careful about how you manage it.
Right. So you go through a low, you fight through that, you get some sugar, you go overboard, you have like one or two too many drops, and next thing you know, your blood sugar is at like 300 and you're just like, I can't win.
and then what how do you feel when you have high blood sugar?
Like it's basically all of the fatigue with none of the shaking and none of the chills. You're just like,
So that's all sounds like hell. So let's talk about the emotional side. So how long has it been since you've been on this patch?
I have been on the pump for, the May will be 2 years.
2 years. So what's the journey been like? Like what you've probably gone through phases, like where are you now? Like that's a huge thing to adjust to. So how have you coped or like what's going on?
I'm still working that out.
Yeah. Let's talk about it.
I'm getting close to the acceptance phase. I'm not quite there yet because I still think about all the days where like I could eat basically whatever I want. I could like do kind of really fringy things like enter a pie eating contest.
Oh, did you really?
Yeah, I did.
Did you do that a lot?
No, I did that only one time.
Oh,
because I wanted to know what it was like. And interestingly enough, I actually won that pie eating contest.
And how?
Yeah, I won that pie eating contest. It was fun. That was a lot of fun.
Wow. So, what was it like? You went. It was shocking at first.
Shock, devastation. Like it's almost like the five stages of grief.
Right, but so is it like you? Is there's a mourning? You miss your old life. There's a mourning.
Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely.
So do you feel like you're different now, or you must be? I mean, it must have changed you. And like, how are you different? Really, is probably a better question.
That's quite a question. That's something I'm still like, I'm trying to like figure out. Like, I know I'm definitely a much different person than who I was.
Uh-huh.
Like between the medical issues and like all the family stuff is like, it's put me through a lot of anxiety, and that's pretty much where the beginning of my anxiety began.
So, oh, you mean, were you not anxious and now you were not an anxious person and now you are an anxious person?
Like I probably had like some forms of anxiety or just overall nervousness. Mm-hmm. Like I was kind of a like nervous, timid kid growing up, but I was more outgoing, especially during my 20s. I was very outgoing. I'd go to concerts, go out and meet people. Mm-hmm. As I've gone through my 30s, like I am a complete shell of who that person was.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow. So you used to go out a lot and now you're much more... You were an outgoing person and now you're not. Do you think it's like depression, a lack of confidence? Like, what do you think happened? Is it all of that, or what do you think happened?
It's a lot of things compounded.
And you think that, do you think that, like, the feeling of, like, that anything can happen is part of it? Like, what happened with, like, man, this is awful. Yeah. So it sounds like,
it's a compounding of grief mixed with kind of disappointment with, like, it almost feels like my own body betrayed me.
Uh-huh.
And like kind of going through like kind of like a slow dive into like just a lot of disappointment with life, disappointment with my body, disappointment with situations, and like just a lot of things wearing on me over the years. It's like chipping away at my confidence, my self-confidence, mm-hmm. my self-esteem. Mm-hmm. And it just ended up falling into depression and anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Just mm-hmm. anxiety mainly due to the fact that I'm like things are not the same and it's constantly changing and almost feeling like I have no control over anything, you know?
Right. I can imagine like all the grief and loss of what happened with your family members might get sort of combined with your illness, you know,
yeah.
like you can't really separate them out, right? It's like one big, you know, mixing bowl filled with not very good things.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Does it get better or worse, or is it consistent, like that whole trauma?
I would say the last 2 years were like really the lowest points.
Mm-hmm.
From an emotional standpoint, just mm-hmm. like almost feeling hopeless, you know?
Yeah. I get it. What's really hard is this whole coronavirus situation on top of that right now.
Yeah.
So how are you feeling? How is that affecting you? The coronavirus thing, how does it affect you? Is it making it harder, or?
The one thing that really helps is the fact that I work from home. Like mm-hmm. I've been working from home this whole time. So in like the self-quarantining, this whole situation, that doesn't bother me. What really bothers me more is like a lot of other uncertainties and
like,
uh-huh. like uncertainties like
out in the world or for you like, personally?
A little bit of both. Like mm-hmm. like out in the world, is this going to get worse? Will my family members be affected? How's this going to affect things like basic things to survive, like going out shopping, getting food? Like, could our food supply be affected by this? Like, what is going to happen?
No. Food supply is fine. I don't want to worry about that. I think the food supply is fine.
Okay.
But I can imagine, you know, what you're talking about. What I was going to say was, I want my listeners to understand that you've got a big ace in the hole, Calvin, that you haven't mentioned. And that is your talents and your skills and your, you know, money, your ability to like make a living. It's huge. Like you have, well, like I was just telling everybody like how talented you are at whatever, like, I don't even know what it is actually that you're talented at, because it's so technologically complicated, I couldn't even like begin. But you have skills that, from where I sit, means that it seems like you're not going to ever have a problem being employed. Am I right?
I do have enough marketable skills to be able to like make a decent living. Like, I wish I were at a point where I was making more money than I currently am. But
of course you do.
But there's so many different things that I'm able to do that I'm like, between my technical skills, my musical skills, thanks Dad, and
your charm. You are very, very, very charming. And like, people like being around you. You're great with people, no?
That's
he is. Okay. Like he's not gonna, because that's, see, it's one of those things. It's one of the charming things about Calvin is he's not going to go, yeah, I am. So, but I think that like that, the ability to earn a living consistently is such a solid thing that you have for yourself, no?
Yes, I have one of the rare abilities to maintain employment for long periods of time.
That is no small thing. I think that's something that you could really leverage that, Calvin. That's a big deal. People, that's something that is huge. And I don't think that can be underestimated on a lot of levels. The ability to take care of yourself, what you're talking about now, the consistency in your life. Like, yeah, you have a lot of inconsistency. There's a lot of things that have happened, but the ability to like maintain an income and health care, right?
Right.
Is,
and that like, goes hand in hand.
Like, you can own that. You can own that you are going to have that. And that's a really big deal, I think. Do you know that, right? I mean,
I do. Like, I can definitely appreciate my skills and my like how that position, like the ways that positions me positively. So, mm-hmm. I try my best not to take that for granted.
No, but the thing is, it's like a way to see how solid you're. Like, what I'm hearing or imagining is like the instability of losing people and thinking like getting this disease that, you know, that is incomprehensible that you got.
Yeah.
And having to learn how to live with that. Like when we were talking about it earlier, it's like I was saying like it's sort of like, in a certain way, if you're blind, there must be something easier about being blind from birth, because you grow up and you learn how to cope with it throughout your life. But having to adjust to being blind and not going through that as a child is mm-hmm. a completely, it's like learning a language, you know, at age 30, as opposed to learning it when you're 2 years old. It's a very different experience.
Right.
So, and like, you know, like the thing that's really awful is the loss of life that you've been through, but that in itself is an ongoing, you know, your diabetes is ongoing, but that was like a bad period that might have gotten emotionally mixed in with the uncertainty of your illness, no?
I definitely agree with that. So just being unable to cope with everything, like trying to find cope with everything, and it's just after a while you just you try your best not to get to a point where you're like, you know what, I give up. So you just kind of go numb, but
Here's what I'm wondering about. I'm wondering about if you ever really got to process the loss of your family members, because this is what I'm wondering, for what it's worth. If you haven't gotten a chance to process that and really, you know, separately from your condition, I'm going to start calling it a condition. Is that okay? Would that make sense if we called it a condition?
Yep, that's fine.
I think we should start thinking of it as a condition. So if you had a chance more to process what you went through with your family members, that might help you manage separately, might help you manage your condition better, because right now they're all in the same boat.
Right.
But the loss of your family members was a one-time thing. And
it took me a long time to realize this, and like me, both my mother and I kind of figured this out together. Like it's like losing family members is like trauma.
It's a very traumatic
experience.
Oh, it's so, all trauma. There's no, I'm just saying, like, if you separate, like, I think if you separate the traumas and look at them separately, that might be a little easier, or it might be easier going forward. I think, like, you know, processing the loss of family members is very difficult, obviously.
Yeah.
And that has one road to it. And I think, like, learning, you know, grieving, losing what you had with your before your illness, and then processing that going forward, is a different experience.
For sure.
A different journey. So you have two journeys that started out together.
Yeah.
But I think, like, processing them separately is maybe a little easier to cope. But we also talked about, like, this is a really big deal, Calvin. I mean, and we talked about being in therapy. So, and you haven't, I mean, I hope you're going to, I mean, I did send you a couple of links. I hope you get started. how have you been trying to process this stuff, or?
I think this year has been, like, really the first time I've been, like, emotionally able to. Like, I'm real, like, something, I don't know what it is about this year, but like I really just needed to get through 2019 with some semblance of sanity. But like literally after the ball dropped, I remember January 1st, after I did my show, I actually did New Year's in the studio.
Oh wow, that's so awesome.
So after that, I went home and I slept for about 15 hours.
Wow.
And for the following two or three weekends, I would just sleep for long periods of time. Just sleeping. I think my brain was like, all right, you made it. It's time to rest now. You've been running from all of this for so long. It's enough's enough. And so that was really when the tide began to turn for me.
Oh, so that's just excellent. You mean,
I think
you
just
felt-
realizing, I think just like, I think some inherent realization that the last 5 or 6 years I've been just running from everything and just trying to find ways to keep my mind occupied. To avoid really falling apart.
Wow.
Yeah, that's really what it was, because I've been running, like, I tried I've tried my best to like process everything, but it's been really difficult to do that. But one thing that really helped out was just like between work and finding different projects to keep me busy. So just basically keeping busy and just keeping consistently going, keeping going, keeping going, keeping going. So basically the last 5 or 6 years have been me just like keep going and just kind of blocking any even like emotional feelings and mm-hmm. any emotions tied to mm-hmm. like all the grief and trauma I've been mm-hmm. feeling. And so finally this year I've been after like my it's almost like a mental and emotional reset.
Wow.
And ever since then I've been really open to feeling a lot of the things that I haven't felt in a long time.
Wow. Wow. That's so amazing. I mean, I don't know. I love hearing you say this. That's all. I'm just saying, I'm so good to hear you say that, you know?
So that's been like the real breakthrough for me in 2020. And it's as weird as it is to say, like with everything going on and with all the madness and chaos in the world, I'm glad it happened this year and not last year, because I would not be emotionally prepared for everything that's happening and is about to happen.
Oh my God, can you imagine?
Like, well, I had enough trouble getting out of bed every morning, like bed in the mornings last year, and just keeping things going. Like I put on a brave face for everything.
Oh, you do?
Because like I know my mom needs me, my work needs me, Radio Free Brooklyn needs me, my friends need me. Like I am like very much for some reason relied on. Like I'm a rock for so many people. And so like I've had to be strong for all of them. And so having to continuously be strong and keep busy, and like I honestly don't think I really bothered to make time to process everything that's been going on. And that was like really how that kind of mental and emotional decline got worse. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very grateful. Like, it's weird to say, it's almost like I gave up, and I'm like after January 1st, and I'm glad I did. I gave up control, and once I gave that up, everything turned around.
Wow. Wow, that is so awesome. So that is really amazing what you've been through. Like, and that you came to that, you know, realization on your, or whatever, you went through the process and you came out in a pretty, you're pretty fucking tough, man. That's all I'm saying. You're a fucking bull, you know, because
one of the things I realized, I don't give myself nearly enough credit, because.
Oh my God, no.
Like this, like things like this take people out every day.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
And I've managed to make it through all of this. And with just enough sanity left.
Well, I mean, you've also, it seems like you put a lot out, you know, out into the world and out into other people, and what you need to keep some for yourself. Is that what do you have, like really high standards for yourself or something? Is that it? Or
that's something I'm still trying to figure out. Like I'm as for somebody with as little self-esteem as I have, I do take pride in like everything that I do, mm-hmm. from my work to things I do at Radio Free Brooklyn to my friendships and relationships, like those, like things that matter to me, I will put everything into.
Mm-hmm. So maybe some of that is avoiding your own feelings by trying to like do good, do like you know, go forward and be strong and doing the right thing. Like there's, it's like a reward. It's like being, are you a workaholic? Like being a workaholic is like people, you get a lot of like people who are workaholics, like you're always achieving a lot and doing well and people really give you a lot of reinforcement, but it's not good for the person who's doing it. Is it that something like that too?
That could possibly be it as well. I'm one of those people that will not stop until something's done. for better or worse. A lot of times detrimental to my emotional well-being, emotional physical well-being, but that's something like, yeah, like you mentioned, like one of the things that I'm probably going to have to do is like really, really begin to take more stock into myself and like invest more time in bettering myself emotionally from an emotional standpoint.
I don't like the way you put that, bettering yourself. I would say honoring yourself. I think you're amazing emotionally. I think you're really, you know, incredibly powerful. I think that the struggle that you describe is, you know, normal and actually, you know, you've handled it better than most. I mean, it's insurmountable. I mean, it's incredible what you've pulled through, and you know that, and you're right. And I think that, you know, I mean, you're really fucking hard on yourself, Calvin.
I am.
And you're not doing yourself any favors by that. We know that, right? What about your friends? People love you. Do you have a lot of support?
I have a lot of people that want to support me, but I don't allow them to.
Okay, well, that's where the problem is.
Yeah.
Right?
We could do another episode on just my trust issues.
Oh, you got trust issues.
Ooh, yeah, I do.
So why is that?
For all the people that have shown me love and support, there have been also people that have really, really like messed me over, emotionally. Whether it was intentional or not. Going back to junior high school.
Let me just hang in there. Let me just, because we have to get to the 59 minute thing. And I'm just, how many minutes do we have, Calvin?
Minute 20.
What, 20?
One minute, 20 seconds.
Oh, okay. So let me just tell everybody, thank you for listening to Radio Free Brooklyn. This is Dr. Lisa. I'm here every Thursday, 2 to 3. Go to our website, radiofreebrooklyn.org. And Calvin, why don't you tell us a little bit, tell us when your show is.
Oh yeah, Lush Vibes Radio, Tuesday nights, 11 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern Time, here on Radio Free Brooklyn.
Okay. So anyway, thanks a lot for listening. And you should stick around because we've got Elon Danziger with Lost and Rewound. This great programming this afternoon. We've got Brooklyn Bands. We did have Brooklyn Bandstand, but we now have, what do we have this afternoon? You know.
Actually, the new 4 o'clock slide is still foreign to me, so I'm trying to commit that to memory.
Okay. So anyway, how much more time?
10 seconds.
10 seconds. All right.
We'll have to do this again.
We'll have to do this again. To be continued. Dr. Lisa gives a shit. Dr. Lisa gives a shit. Dr. Lisa gives a shit.